If you listen to this program regularly, you'll know that we've been given exclusive access to the collection being built for the new National Museum of African American History and Culture. The museum's scheduled to open its doors on the National Mall here in Washington, D.C. in 2015, but until then, we've been popping in to visit the founding director, Lonnie Bunch, every few weeks to see what he's acquired for the permanent collection, things like Michael Jackson's fedora and Harriet Tubman's personal hymnal. And when we went to see Lonnie this past week, the first thing he pulled out was a letter written in 1858. The radical abolitionist John Brown wrote it to his wife while he was a fugitive from the law, and he happened to be visiting Frederick Douglass at his home in Rochester, New York at the time.
Here you have John Brown, who is a year before Harper's Ferry, but he's infamous or famous, depending upon your politics, for fighting against pro-slavery forces in Kansas. And so he's already wanted by the federal government. And here is a letter where he talks about who he is and his love of family. But what makes it special for me is that on the other side, you have Frederick Douglass writing a special note to his wife as well. So to have these two figures, John Brown and Frederick Douglass, coming together on the same paper in 1858, it's pretty special.
Now, in this letter, John Brown is in Rochester, New York, visiting Frederick Douglass. He's on the run, presumably.
In some ways, what I love about this letter is how he says in the letter, but don't let anybody know where I am, because he's still in hiding. And what I think is special is the notion that he's not sure when he will see his family, but he knows that his commitment to abolitionism is the most important thing in his life.
Do you mind reading a little bit of what John Brown wrote to his wife?
My dear wife and children, everyone, whether or not I will be able to visit you this spring or winter, I cannot say. But it is some relief of mine to feel that I am again so near you. The anxiety I feel to see my wife and children once more, I am unable to describe. I want exceedingly to see my big baby and Ruth's baby, and I want to see how I can spend time with you in the future, but I do not know what the future will bring.
Amazing. This next item, Lonnie, is also an important turning point in history.
What we have in front of us is one of the many pens that Lyndon Johnson used to sign the Voting Rights Act in 1965. Mm. The Voting Rights Act is finally the culmination of the Civil War and the 14th and 15th Amendments. The fact that it took another 100 years before you could guarantee that the federal government would do everything they can to ensure African Americans could vote on an equal basis with non-African Americans is pretty powerful.
Until then, in some counties, there were literacy tests or property requirements, and this effectively said, you can't do that.
What this act does is it says that the federal government will now use all of its resources. It could be legal resources, military resources, to protect the right of African Americans to vote. It is one of the transformative pieces of legislation ever in the United States.
When I found out that you were going to show us this next item, I wasn't sure how I would react when I saw it. This is something that probably people coming to a museum of African American history and culture, a museum that celebrates African American history and culture, might not expect to see something like this there. And as we unroll it, I'll let you describe what we're looking at.
What we are looking at is a very large banner, probably 4 feet by 3 feet across. And it's a banner that at the top of it says KKKK, Knights of the Ku Klux Klan. In the center of the banner is a cross, which to the Klan symbolizes their connection to God, the fact that God is on their side. And in the bottom it says Derry Klan number 147, which I think is a Klan group in Indiana. And the Ku Klux Klan, this banner is from the Ku Klux Klan of the 1920s. And the history is fascinating, that you have the Klan that we all think about that comes out of Reconstruction, that really fights against black agency during Reconstruction. That Klan is basically curtailed by the federal government in the late 19th century. Mm. But then this Klan in the 1920s is a Klan that on the one hand comes out of fear not only of African Americans, but of Jewish immigrants and immigrants generally. And this is a group of people who feel that their America is under attack from a variety of quarters. And for the first time in the 20s, the Klan is a national organization.
And could you celebrate African American history and culture at the museum without showing things like this?
I don't think so. It's a real issue for us. Do you put out for display things that are hateful, that are painful, that in some ways there are still people who see this as a positive? But I think that part of a museum's job is to tell the unvarnished truth. And you can't understand Black resiliency or achievement or concern about race without understanding how powerful the Klan was and how important it's been as a force for almost 100 years.
Incredible. Lonnie, thank you so much. And Lonnie Bunch, of course, is the founding director of the National Museum of African American History and Culture. It's set to open its doors here in Washington, D.C. in 2015. Lonnie, thank you again.
My great pleasure.